You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Folks, do you feel like everything these days is go, go, go? It's nonstop from work to friends to family and a million pressing issues. Sometimes you just need to take a play off and hit the reset button. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. Hey, it's that time of year in Minnesota again to get out on the lake, go to the cabin, sit back, watch some baseball. Coors Light is the perfect refreshment to chill during these summer months. There's only one beer out there that's made to chill. The mountains on the bottles and cans turn blue when your beer is cold, and that way you know it's time to chill. Hit that reset button with some mountain cold refreshment. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's literally made to chill. It's crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Coors Light is the one you should choose when you need to unwind, when you want to hit the reset button. Reach for the beer that is made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado, and as always, celebrate. Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collard here. The show is always presented by Scout Logistics and Symbol, your stock market for sports. And before we get into my interview with Corey Heppala, just want to note that Corey and I recorded just before the Vikings signed Patrick Peterson. As seems to happen to me with every single podcast, they make a big move right after I finish recording. But I think as you'll listen to Corey's comments about free agency, you'll get a good idea about how he feels about the Patrick Peterson signing. Really fun conversation, some great stories from Corey Heppala of WCCO. So here is our chat. Corey Heppala, he is the host of Hey, It's Corey Heppala. So Hey, It's Corey Heppala from WCCO, our first time getting together. Let's say, I think ever, is that right?
At least on the air, for sure. At least on the air. Well, just know I'm a huge fan of the show. I listen to the podcast every single day, so this is a thrill for me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I really appreciate that. Yes, we have gotten together for lunch many times. I just didn't know if we had gotten together on any sort of radio or podcast broadcast. So I am excited to do this, in part because every time we have lunch, which now feels like a weird thing to talk about since COVID. It's like, remember when we used to get together and have lunch? But anyway, we would always end up talking just like endless Vikings. So I wanted to take those conversations that we have and bring them here because you have such a great Vikings fan perspective. Like most of the people that come on the show, as you know, as a listener, are like hardcore football. Let's break down the two deep and the defensive tackles and how everything affects everything. But I want to talk about off seasons with you, Corey, and how – just give me your broad reaction to this. Like, this one feels super weird. Like, there have been others where there's big, exciting moves. There have been others that felt hopeless. And this one feels like it's floating somewhere in the purgatory middle. And I will tell you that I'm not sure what to do with it.
As a Vikings fan who was basically born in a Vikings onesie, so I come at this from, yes, a logical standpoint in that I understand where this team is at today, maybe some of the goals, but I also hold all that baggage from all of those playoff losses, all those epic disasters. So I have all that baggage, and I think I carry that through me through a Viking season. My favorite time to be a Vikings fan is the offseason. Like, I'm so much more optimistic in the offseason. I'm always excited. Like, every single signing that happens, I'm typically like, oh, that's the one. And then in the draft, I'm usually the first to be like, even if it's not that great, I'm kind of like, well, I think the Vikings may have won the draft. You know, like, I'm an optimistic off-season Vikings fan. In fact, that's when my wife would say I'm the happiest person. Because then during the season, it's like one loss. Even if it's a preseason, it sets me off. I'm like, well, this is – can't hit the restart button now. It's all over. So I kind of look at it that way. But one thing that I have done – and I think I've changed my outlook a little bit differently here over maybe the last few years, but I think I've gotten into Vikings offseason with a little bit more patience, and I think you need to do that with this offseason in particular. And what I mean by that, I look at it like say, a piece of art, right? So we're looking at this canvas that is blank to start the offseason. And Rick Spielman and the gang, I mean, they're getting started on it. And yes, now we get our information in real time. So it's like, oh, man, Dalvin Tomlinson, I don't really know what to make of it. And maybe it wasn't the smartest move and this and that. Well, the painting's not done yet. I think for me to be able to evaluate how the offseason is, I'm not going to say they overpaid or didn't overpay for Tomlinson or it's not the right fit or this or that. I need to wait till the end because, to me, what if they add another defensive end? What if they restructure Hunter and then they add another defensive end? Well, then we can make this work, and then you're coming in and DJ Wadham's he's a backup, but he's coming in for spurts, and then you've got – so I'm not the most patient person, but I've tried to become a little bit more patient and say, let's just hang on a minute. Just because you don't make a move on day one or two or three doesn't mean that they're not going to do the right thing. And also, too, I've heard you and Sam talk about this, and I side with this. I would rather the Vikings sign, and they have the needs, 5 or 6 players that are good players. Maybe not great, but if you sign 5 or 6 good players that are NFL caliber, well, now you're filling 5 or 6 spots that shouldn't have been played by last year's version of the Vikings, which they shouldn't have been NFL players. So that's the way I look at this offseason in particular.
You know what's very different from recent offseasons that I've covered is that we just don't see a lot of the picture yet, even after one signing, because there are so many needs. And in past years, that just hasn't really been the case. Even last year, they didn't have enough cap space to sign a bunch of players, and they elected to trade for Yannick Ngakoue as opposed to, you know, bringing in a couple of $1 million or $2 million guys, which clearly turned out to be not the right move for last offseason. But we still had a really good sense of how they were going to handle all that after the Stephon Diggs trade happened, and we knew there was going to be big movement. It was predictably exciting last offseason, but all the things that happened were not shockers. Maybe the Diggs trade came as a bit of a surprise, but I think we all knew that he wasn't very happy. And in past years, it was like coming out of 2016, they are going to sign some tackles. Like, there's no question about it. And then going into 2018, they're going to bring in, you know, a quarterback. We didn't know who, but we knew exactly what was going to happen. This year, it feels very different because there are so many options and so many different ways that you can paint the picture. And then you add the fact that they have 12 draft picks right now, which will turn into 15, I'm sure. And that there's quarterback movement all over the league. Like, this is the most uncertain of what they'll do that I've been. And then their first signing is one that none of us really predicted.
Well, I think you had mentioned Tomlinson in a previous pod of like, oh, you never know. He could be a name that fits there. So I think there's a couple of things here. One, they're in this odd spot where they are trying to, and they did it last year too, they're trying to transition without tanking. They just don't want to tank. They can't. Rick Spielman's in a position where he knows basically this year, and maybe not him so much. I think he's in, you know, kind of on the hot seat, but Mike Zimmer for sure. Like, if they don't make the playoffs, they're gone. Like, they just are. The Wilfs, I think, are semi-patient people. They've said before they kind of want the Steelers model. But if you miss the playoffs again with this roster when they've given you everything and they've said, hey, and you have Rob Brzezinski who's manipulating the cap and doing everything, it's going to come down to, look, we've given you everything. It's just time. And I think that's what the Wilfs have allowed them to do, which is great. But they're trying to do this transition without tanking. Last year, 7 wins, no tanking. We thought maybe at 1-5 they would tank. They didn't even do that then. They didn't make trades. They said, we're going to get back on here and make a run, which got exciting for a few weeks, and then they lost to Dallas. And then they ended up 7-9. And, you know, I've talked to on my show Jeff Diamond, former general manager of the Vikings, who put together that 98 team. And he said, there's just something about it. Losing 10 games sounds way worse than losing 9. You know, so that's a part of it too. But this, you know, and you guys have talked about it, but this current front office with Rick Spielman and then Mike Zimmer as head coach, they know this cannot be another 7-9, 8-8 season. It has to be better. In fact, I would say it has to be better than 9-7. They know it. They feel it. So they're going to do everything they can. They're manipulating the cap. You know, even with Tomlinson's contract, it's like, hey, look, and then there's this void year in year 3. And they're like, I don't know if we'll be here. But regardless, they're doing these things because they know they need to turn it around here soon. The other part of this, okay, So you have to do enough before you get to the NFL draft, right? You have to do enough because you want to have the flexibility with those, what we assume will be 15 picks, to be able to mostly attack best player available. If you crunch the data, that's the best place to go about it, is to go best player available. Now, you look at it today, Vikings have so many holes that they could probably go in any direction and it's going to be best player available. But I think what you're going to see, and I would imagine, you're going to probably see an offensive lineman and a defensive back and hopefully a wide receiver three. That's what I would do, even if they're not superstars, but good players so that you can go into the draft and say, all right, well, this person will make this core or this position better. So let's just do that. And that's what I'm hopeful for. And that's why, too, I would much rather than say, okay, we opened up this cap space, let's spend it all on one player. I would still rather them go, all right, let's bring Mackenzie Alexander back. Let's restructure Daniil. Let's extend Harrison. Let's do that thing with Thielen. And then let's go get two guards. Get two of them that can come in here and compete and be average level. And if you get the best player available in the draft in round one, first it gives you the flexibility to move down, pick up a second. But then if it's the best is an offensive lineman, okay, go do it. If it's Devontae Smith, go do it. Like, that's the position they need to be in come draft time, and I'm hopeful that now they do enough here. I'm just going to be patient. That's all.
Yeah, and I'm sure, at least judging by my Twitter mentions, it is not easy to remain patient when you do have as many needs as they have. I put out a poll of, hey, what position do you want to see the next Vikings signing? And many people tweeted me, all of the above, you know, because there were four different positions and they have needs at all of them. It feels to me like this is a similar type of offseason from going from 2013 to 2014. And even though that was very different with a new coach coming in, there were so many holes at that time, and I thought they made good decisions. I think that they signed Captain Munnerlyn and Linval Joseph in that offseason. Like, those were good decisions. Those were players who could probably be a little bit better than they had been in their past place if they were with Mike Zimmer, guys who fit needs right away. And they worked out to be really good. And maybe that was the year or it was the next year that they got Terrence Newman. Like, those are the types of players who filled very important roles by 2017. The difference is exactly what you mentioned, though. Then it was, you could take a long-term approach. If Linval Joseph doesn't work out the way you think he's going to work out, it's okay. It's not going to ruin the entire franchise. You've got 3-4 years to build this thing up. Mike Zimmer is the head coach. But now it feels like you absolutely have to fix these problems right now, right away. And tell me how you feel about this, Corey, as somebody who has grown up watching a lot of different types of coaches in Minnesota rise and fall. I always feel like that patience is a better play because you don't want people making decisions for their jobs. So give me perspective on that for how you feel about it.
I would not be a good general manager. I'm too emotional. Right. I ride the ups. I ride the downs. Like, that's why I'm not a general manager. I can do that. I want my general manager to be even keeled and look at the whole process and look at the final results. And yes, give time. And I look at Rick Spielman. Is he perfect? No. Rick Spielman's a very good general manager, though. And I think he gets critiqued. Oh, look at this draft. He did this. Look, if you look at any other general manager's draft, they're usually not at Rick Spielman's level, and they're usually not much better, which means he is near the top. He's a good general manager, very good general manager. And look at Mike Zimmer's winning percentage when you consider the fact that he's really had, up until Kirk Cousins, no stability at quarterback. I mean, he's won just about 60% of his games as a head coach over this amount of time. He's a good head coach. Is he perfect? No. But if you go, all right, Mike Zimmer, you're out of here. Look, the next guy you're going to get in here, one, we have taken for granted up until last season just the defense is going to be good. The defense is going to be good. And I think they'll be much better this year. But you saw what would happen if you replaced a Mike Zimmer. All of a sudden, maybe they wouldn't be 29th, but they're not going to be as good. They're just not going to be as consistently good under Mike Zimmer. Now, the thing I give credit for Mike Zimmer is that he has never said, well, this is the only way we're going to do it on offense. He's tried a number of different things. He's trying to make it work. He's okay taking in this information and this information and saying, all right, well, let's try this. Now, I do think he is seemingly set on this Kubiak style of offense that seems to work. I also think that's predicated on the quarterback. I think that he saw what happened in 2018 and said, we'll let it fly. And then Kirk, what, do you have like six or seven turnovers that were straight away pick sixes or fumbles that return for a touchdown? Like, all of a sudden his defense that allowed 18 points a game was, you know, they get tacked for these points and it's 21 points a game. I mean, that's how bad it was. And I think he said, we can't do that. Oh, and by the way, Kirk is better when he's in play action. A lot of quarterbacks are. So I think that's where they're at. He's like, I like this offense because we need to control the time of possession and we need to limit the amount of potential turnovers, which happen with Kirk. I think that's a large part of it. But I guess I look at it as, I think Rick Spielman's really good. Does that mean you can never fire him? Of course not. But I think he's really good. And I think sometimes he gets undue critique that, look, it's just a part of the gig. It's not a perfect science.
Hey, everybody. Want to tell you about our friends at Symbol. Symbol is a new sports marketplace where you can trade shares of professional teams like stocks. So as we jump fully into free agency season, you're going to want to get in on teams now before your team's stock rises. Go to Symbol.app. That is Symbull.app. Sign up using the promo code PURPLE and get a $10 deposit bonus if you're a first-time user, and then you are off and rolling. Here's how it works. You buy stocks of your teams, and when your team wins, you earn cash payouts that are instantly deposited. If you sign up for Symbol, you also get updates emailed to you directly with the trends on which teams are on the rise. So check out Symbol.app or follow them on Twitter at Symbol Exchange and check out the marketplace for sports today. Folks, March is quite the month for Minnesota sports, and SodaStick has you covered with Minnesota sports-themed gear. The hockey team is headed down the stretch, so you've got to check out the Dollar Bill Krill shirt, and baseball is ready to get started. Go to SodaStick.com, check out the Touch-Em-All shirts, the Twinkies hats, and the Tomorrow Night hoodies. If you use the promo code PURPLEINSIDER, you can get free shipping. So go to SodaStick.com to get your original Minnesota sports-inspired goods. All of their apparel is screen-printed here in Minnesota on super soft, super comfy shirts and hoodies. You will love it. That is SodaStick, SOTASTICK.com. Original Minnesota sports-inspired goods. Code PURPLEINSIDER for free shipping. Yeah, I think that there are tricky different, I guess, processes you can use to criticize certain moves or not. Like that you walk a tightrope, put it that way, of like what's fair and what's bad luck and what's good luck that we should or shouldn't give them credit. And it's probably a case-by-case basis. On the overall, the Vikings went from a team that was in the dumps when Mike Zimmer took over to a team that was consistently talked about for maybe a 4 or 5 year period as a potential Super Bowl contender. And the thing that did was set the bar at a different place. So when you go 7-9, then you feel like what a disaster season, as opposed to, okay, well, that's kind of your average season. And with Kirk Cousins being brought in also at the time that he was, that also changed the goals and that set the bar at a different place. And I also feel like that changed the way everyone operated and the pressure under which they operated. And the results have played out of that. Like, we have to pay everyone. We can't let anyone go. We have to make sure that Anthony Barr gets his huge contract, and so forth. And that just put them in a situation eventually to have to take a step back to where they are now. But I feel like asking them to continue to operate under that pressure for the long term until you go 13-3 again, basically, I don't know if that's really the best plan. And the thing is that the Wilfs don't talk very often. And when they do, you don't get a whole lot of information. And it's not like they have a bunch of people who leak stuff to the media either. So we don't really know how patient they're willing to be with Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman. But I think that this offseason is going to tell us that. Our first hint is not super patient because they spent a lot of money on a defensive tackle. I don't care if you put void years. Like, no one wants to do that. That's a panicky type of thing that you do to make sure you got your guy. And that's where I wonder where the rest of this thing goes. Like, are you going to draft another guy where you say you have to step in right away? You have to fill a big role, because those are the types of things that get you, kind of in trouble, is not taking that long view.
Well, and I look at that's, I guess, why I don't want to see them just go and sign a corner for a big deal or an offensive lineman for one big contract, because I don't think they're one player away from a Super Bowl. I don't think they're one player away from a long playoff run. Now, I think that they are four or five good players away from winning the division, perhaps, and maybe winning a playoff game. I mean, you don't know. The NFL quickly turns things around, and yes, they had very bad luck on defense. So I think, you know, you restructure Hunter, and if he's here, Barr and Kendrick stay healthy, and you get another cornerback there, and you draft well, I think the defense can be very good. I think they could be a top 10 defense, certainly, given Mike Zimmer's track record and stuff like that. Sure. But I just don't think they're one player away from a Super Bowl. So then that goes back to understanding who you are. Like, and I don't know that I don't know if they've convinced themselves that they are, well, we're one player away from a Super Bowl. And if they've done that, then they're mistaken, because they're just not. Like, they're just not with the way this is constructed. Now, let me pose this to you, Matthew. If Rick Spielman were to draft a quarterback this time around, do you think that extends his tenure as GM? And I'll let you answer first, because I have some thoughts on that too.
Well, I think it does, because what it would say is, A, you don't draft a quarterback without the permission of ownership. Like, that's a decision you're going to take to the top and say, this is what we're thinking about doing with the most important position in the organization. And if they say, yes, you can do that, go forward with it, that says to me, you're going to take the long view of, all right, we realize that Kirk Cousins' contract situation sets up for an exit for him next year, maybe on a trade, or even just taking his contract all the way to the end, if that's tenable. I don't think that it is taking it all the way to the end, but let's even say we realize that he's not going to be the long-term quarterback because of his contract, and so now you're going to have time to build this roster around a rookie. That would set up your timeline as kind of like 2022 for a rookie to be starting. If you say drafted Trey Lance or something like that, it sets up 2022, and that gives everybody a little more breathing room to be patient. It's just that if they've made that decision, you know, it doesn't look like it at the moment when you sign Dalvin Tomlinson. If you've made that decision to draft a quarterback and then take the long view, adding a player who's a big name and costs a lot and is going to help you right away doesn't seem to really jive with that. Not that they're in such dire position, and you mentioned his contract, that they can't do anything else because they poured it all into him. That's not the case. And he's not old either. He's not like 34 years old and they're taking their last swing. So this one could kind of rest in the middle ultimately, but that idea of drafting a quarterback, which makes a lot of sense in their current situation, if you're looking down the road, that says long view. If they draft a pass rusher, that says to me, oh, we really needed someone to come in and help us rush the passer today.
Yeah, and I totally agree. See, I think if Rick Spielman were to draft a quarterback, that's a discussion you have with the ownership. But you also then say, hey, look, this is our next step. Right? This is our next step. We've got this guy after this year. We're going to entertain an Alex Smith-like trade for Kirk Cousins. We're going to bring this guy in. But that's where they're also playing both sides, right? Because then it's like, well, look, then we'll have a competitive roster, and we'll put this second-year quarterback, like a Dante Culpepper, when they drafted him, he sat a year in his second year, put in the second-year quarterback, and the team's not crappy. Like, the team is okay. Now, are they a finished product? Certainly not. They've got money here, here, and here, and you don't have a ton of cap space. But at the same time, you're not putting that quarterback into a situation where you're like, hey, here's the Jets, good luck. You know, and that's the worst position to draft a quarterback and put him into a 2-14 team that has no cap space and no talent.
And that's where you could see with this team, if they did decide to do that, you can set that player up to have Justin Jefferson and other weapons that you bring in. And maybe by that time, and this is being very optimistic, you could build the offensive line a little more, possibly, maybe.
Probably not, though.
And
that's the one issue I have, I think, maybe the top issue that I have with this current administration is that I just don't trust what they're doing with the offensive line. I just don't trust it. Like, you know, and not that they're going to come out and say, hey, look, we let Riley Reiff go because we're moving Ezra Cleveland to left tackle. Like, that's what makes sense. Like, when I listen to the guys on your show, like Brandon Thorne and Jeremiah Searles and all these other people, every single person is like, Ezra Cleveland is a tackle. And it's because of all these different reasons. Like, can he learn guard? Sure. But why are you moving him over on the other side of the line Why are you moving him to a different position where his weaknesses are now accentuated as opposed to his strengths, where his speed and agility at left tackle would be able to help with the quick pass rush? Like, that to me, I don't understand what they're doing. Now, maybe Cleveland's just going to move over, Rashad Hill is a swing tackle, and everything's fine. You just get a couple guards. But I don't know what they're doing, and this is a consistent thing with them, and that's where I'm just like, do they know what they're doing?
History would say on the offensive line specifically, no. But sometimes it's all about just how much you invest in it. And when you try to patchwork left guard over and over and over again with guys who make $800,000, you kind of get what you pay for. And they've been put in a position where they can only pay so much for certain positions. So if you were deciding to kind of pick through the positions and where you want to spend your money, you would not have picked guard very high. It just so turns out with this quarterback, maybe you should have picked guard higher. But ultimately, then this is where luck and randomness plays into it. Ultimately, Riley Reiff deciding not to stick around might work out very much in their favor if Ezra Cleveland does pop over to left tackle and then becomes very good at it. Their lack of confidence from last year in him doing that is what's kind of got me wondering what's going to happen here, because normally we would have just said, oh, okay, well, you slide him right in and off you go. But the fact that he never played tackle in practice in the very beginning is what kind of has you a little bit mind boggled. But a lot of times, though, when you mention like building up the roster and everything else, if you are the team that is sort of exciting and has some money, people want to sign with you. AJ yeah. Green just signed with Arizona. Why did he do that? Their quarterback is kind of exciting and they've got money. And there you go. Like, sometimes that's all it takes to fill those positions that were so hard to fill before. Question for you, though. In years past and off seasons, you can go back as far as you want. I want you to tell me the player that you are most excited about or most disappointed, or if you have many names here, it's fine. Like, guys that on day one, you were maybe back in the day refreshing ESPN.com or watching the scroll on ESPN or something, and you were like, come on, Vikings, get this guy. And then it would not have mattered if they did, or it didn't matter that they signed him.
You're going to love this story. So we were in college, and this is the early days of, like, message boards. So there was one, like, KFFL. Was that what it was? We were just talking about it the other day, and I can't remember. But it was, like, message boards for, you know, for every NFL team. And so we were – me and my college roommates, we were in this one for the Vikings. And so one of my college roommates, Kent, he was the guy who didn't go to class, and he stayed up all night. And we went to bed in the first or second night of free agency, and we're all excited. And we're like, what are the Vikings going to do? Now, this is the Red McCombs era, so it's like, you're probably not going to do anything, right? Like, he forever was so cheap in this Vikings organization. Another testament to the Wilfs. They're great ownership. They're the type of owners you want to have owning your team. But so we go to bed, and me and my buddy, we shared a room in this house. We had seven guys living in this house. So me and my buddy Aaron, we go to bed, and we wake up, and there was a sign on our door that said, just in capital letters, Vikes sign Claiborne with 1,000 exclamation points, and the Vikings inside linebacker Chris Claiborne. And we were so excited. We were like partying the next day. We're so pumped at the Vikings signed Chris Claiborne, who I don't even know. I think he maybe made it a year but wasn't very good with the Vikings, but it was like – we still talk about that. In fact, we got a text chain that every year NFL free agency starts, we remind each other, the Vikings signed Claiborne.
That is tremendous, Claiborne. Yeah, getting super excited about free agents that don't matter is an all-time fun football thing. And I brought this one up not too long ago, but maybe you'll remember it. Since I've been here, Eddie Lacy visiting is my favorite. Because
oh, yeah.
Eddie Lacy did absolutely nothing, was out of the league by the next year, and yet it was, oh, he's visiting, and we're tracking him down at the airport, and I think Jared Cook maybe did the same thing, but, you know, at least Cook was good for the Saints. Eddie Lacy was just done playing football very shortly after. It's like everybody, oh, he's the next guy after Adrian Peterson and all that sort of stuff. It's one of my favorite times of the year just for those alone.
And the swings, too. It's like when you're rumored for a guy, you're like, oh, man, Joe Thuney, I can't wait. He's going to be so great here. Oh, can they get him? They need a guard. And then he signs elsewhere. Man, it's a lot of money. I don't know. He really isn't worth it. There's so many swings like that. And then even a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, when they signed the wide receiver, like Kendall Wright, was it?
Yes. Yep.
And I remember being like, well, that's a great third wide receiver option. You know, great third wide receiver. And the guy never even played a down. And so there's a lot of those things that happen where you get unnecessarily way too excited about someone. And that's another reason why, too, like free agency. I love free agency. But I also think, like, just take your swings. You know, take your swings. Get your guys on good deals. And well, you had brought it up, too. The problem is now the Vikings are not seen nationally by any free agents as – well, they're just one player away. So nobody's going to take that great deal just to be on a team-friendly deal to go here because we're not the 2018 Vikings, right? We're not coming off the NFC Championship. We're not. So that's the problem right now is we're going to have to pay to get good free agents here.
But when you're desperate, then that's when you sometimes make your mistakes, yeah. Right? So I think that we should be skeptical a little bit of the Patriots. Like, what are you doing? Are you trying to go 9-7? Because you are really headed on a, you know, steamrolling train toward 9-7 by signing all these guys and having it blow up in your face a year or two from now. So you might be the team that wins the middle of March, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win when the games actually matter.
Just seems so odd from them because they're usually – and now I get it. They had basically the 8 last year knowing we're going to have all this cap space. But it's like you have money. Just because you have money doesn't mean you need to spend money. Like you can save it. You can allocate it in different ways. You can I hope the Vikings take that advice too, where it's like, all right, you may have money, but you don't need to spend it just to spend it. Let's be wise here.
All right. So here's what I want you to do before we wrap up is because you are a fan of the show, you know all about doing pie charts. So I need a pie chart from you. Okay, so here's your pie chart. On this date in the middle of March, while there's snow still on the ground, maybe it's melting outside of me right now, I want you to give me, here's your four options for your pie chart, percentage chance that the Vikings are A, 7-9 or worse, the dreaded middle, which is, you know, 8-8 to 10-6, somewhere in there. They are better than that, so 11 wins or more, and other, so anything else, so meaning 14-2 or 2-14. So you can have 7-9, and I'll throw in 6-10, 6-10, 7-9, the middle of 8-8, 9-7, 10-6, 11-5 or better, or other. Pie chart.
I'm so thankful I got this opportunity.
Do you want the music?
Most of the guests, I'm going to write it down.
Come up with your pie chart
here
right now.
What I'm going to do.
Okay, work your way through this. Take your time.
Let's go. Okay.
Sometimes I have to edit out how long Courtney takes to put together her pie. So you can't be worse than that.
All right. So I think I got it.
Okay.
So I'm going to go other. I'm going to start other. So I take that to be like, you know, 4-12 and under or basically 13-3 or better. That's kind of what I'm putting there. I'm going to go 5%. I just don't see it. I don't see them being 13 wins or more. I don't see them being bad. I just think with Kirk Cousins, I think with the staff, and I also think too they had a lot go wrong last year, so I don't think they're going to be really bad. I just typically those things kind of even themselves out. We saw in 2016 just 10 injuries in the offensive line and all this bad stuff happened, and they still finished 8-8. Last year, all this stuff happened, they still finished 7-9. The only way this would happen would be is Iron Man Kirk Cousins getting hurt in week one, and you've got to play a backup all year long, and then it's a disaster. And in that case, maybe 4-12, 5-11. But he's never shown to be hurt. So I'll go 5% there. I'm going to take the next two, and they're kind of evened out here. So I'm going to go, like, in that 7-9 range, I'm going to go 15. I think they're going to be a little bit better than that. So I'm going to – and I don't think they're going to be worse than that. So I'm going to go 15% for, like, 7-9. 11 wins to 12 wins, I'll go 15. I could see it happening. I could see if things fell the right way, they catch a couple breaks. Maybe they got some of that the Packer officials over here, and maybe they catch a couple breaks. Then they get to, you know, 11, 12 wins. Like everything breaks their way for two straight years like the Packers. We'll go 15%. So at least 65% in that 8-8, 10-6 range. I think that they're going to be better than last year. I think there's a large shot that, boy, I'm leaving. They could, you know, because I think back now, 2019, they really could have won 11 games had they played any starters that week. So, but I think the 15% covers me there. I'll go 8-8 to 10-6 in that 65% range because I think that's where they're at. I really think as of right now, they're in that 8-9-10 win range. Now, something crazy could happen, right? I mean, we get off the air as your podcast typically do. We could see that they've traded for Deshaun Watson. I know. They've traded for Deshaun Watson, and now this changes everything. But I'm going to go 65% as we sit this moment today.
Hey, everyone. I want to tell you about our friends at Scout Logistics, and I really do mean it when I say friends. They are fans of Purple Insider over at Scout Logistics, and since they reached out wanting to support this show, I want to tell you about what they do. Scout Logistics is just-in-time transportation for full tractor-trailer loads, and if you're wondering what that means exactly, well, if you own or work for a company that needs shipping solutions, they are the preferred carrier of Fortune 500 companies across North America, and we have quite a few of those in Minnesota, right? They can ship perishable, non-perishable, FTL or LTL, and they have on-time delivery rate of over 99%. So, if you're like them and you enjoy the show and you have shipping needs, check out scoutlogistics.com or call 855-217-2688 extension 232 to connect with them directly to find out how Scout Logistics can minimize risk and overperform and go the extra mile for your company.
I've been peeking at my phone just in case. Like, I have the Adam Schefter, you know, notifications, yeah. Like, just in case, a peek down, like, the Falcons kicker is leaving. So that's not big news. But, you know, you always have to check because you're right. As soon as podcasts are over, that's when things happen. But I love it. That's a great pie chart. And it's just hard. It's hard to disagree with. Like, when you look at just how the roster looks right now, the holes that you still have, but the talent that you still have. Like, is Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen going to let them have a horrible offense? Like, probably not. Not unless Clint Kubiak is doing it on purpose, like trying to take it apart. And like you said, the injury is a very low chance, unless Jake Browning went full Kurt Warner and then just took over and became a superstar. But it's not a high chance that he gets hurt. And that is the only thing that could take you apart to be less than 7 wins. The one thing I would add is that, you know, they have a tough schedule this year. And I don't think they had a particularly tough schedule last year. I mean, they lost to Mitch Trubisky. They lost to Andy Dalton, which is the reason Vikings fans can't laugh at the Bears at the moment. But, like, those were not particularly difficult games when you looked at the schedule. They lost to Atlanta. Like, this year they're going to face the West in the NFC, and then the North in the AFC. That's a lot of really good teams and good quarterbacks and good defenses, and it could be tough. But I still think you're right. You get enough wins to put you in the playoffs, and then after that, you know, we might be talking about people fighting for their jobs in the playoffs, and that's up to be very interesting.
Yeah, I think kind of taking that into account, I just think the defense is going to be so much better. Like, they're going to be competitive.
Yeah.
Last year, they just weren't competitive. And I think there are going to be games where the defense is just keeping you in games that you weren't having to play a track meet the whole time. So I think that will help. And you know, you look at that hard schedule, I think that plays a factor why I can't imagine a Kirk Cousins team winning 12 games or more. I can't. And you know, there's a lot of people that will say, well, Kirk Cousins played, and we heard the general manager say that. We think he played his best football the last after the bye and into the offseason and the last stretch. That's great. The first 6 games counted, too. Like, that's a part of the season. Like, I don't understand that theory. It's like, well, yeah, but he did lose you 2 of those first 6 games. Like, he himself, like, physically lost the Falcons game and the Packers game and the Colts game, you could even argue, too. Like, so that still mattered. They still counted. That's where I kind of get this. And if you look at his career over a 16-game period, there's always those games. There's all of them. And the data you pointed out, the data points out that when he goes up against the top 7 defense, which didn't face many of them this year, he's not great. Now you put him up against a top 10 defense, and he's better than Tom Brady. He's better than Aaron Rodgers. He's better than anybody. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, bottom 10, you mean. He's better.
Bottom 10.
It is incredible. And you're right about the way that, you know, we kind of can pick and choose. Wasn't it Brian Dozier who hit, like, 20 home yes. runs in September or something? And then everyone went, wow, he's just a 40 home run hitter, and that's what he'll do. And then the next April and May, he comes out. I mean, that's just the nature of sports like this. And every year of Kirk Cousins' career, he has a 5 or 7 game stretch where he is absolutely fantastic. So it isn't something you could say, oh, let's just copy and paste that to next year. Plus, didn't he throw like 4 touchdowns against the Lions on the last day? I mean,
Kirk Cousins is good. I don't want anybody to say that, oh, Heppler doesn't think he's good. I think Kirk Cousins is great. I think he's one of the top 12 people in his job in the entire world, which is amazing. But there's just so many things that factor into this where his success is reliant on so many other factors, and that's why he lands in that, you know, 9 to 12 range. And that's great. Like, he's a very, very, very good player. But that's all a part of it. And there's a stretch too every single year where there's 2-3 games where you're like, where is he? Like, what's he thinking? Like, how does that happen a week after he just did that? That's kind of what all factors in here for me as well. And the other thing too, you talked about Brian Dozier. Now, he still hit him. Like, that was amazing. He had 40-some home runs in a year where they lost 100 games. Kirk Cousins played the best football of his career when they were 1-5. Like, the pressure and, like, all of that plays a factor too. These guys are humans.
Yeah, well, I just generally agree with your – if you grab arbitrary endpoints, you can make a lot of people look good. Like, you could go to PFF and say, hey, over this 4-game section, you know, Armon Watts was one of the top 20 defensive tackles. Like, nope, it's a 16-game season. You got to do it the whole time. So, sorry, Armon Watts, for taking that needless drive-by at you. But, you know, that's just a good point about arbitrary endpoints and just saying, from this point to this point, this guy was great. So, he'll always be great. Anyway – hey, it's Corey Heppala, along with Dave Harrigan, by the way, my friend Dave Harrigan. And people should check out your show if they haven't. It's on from 9 to 12 in the morning, and also follow you on Twitter because you do a lot of great stuff on social media as well. And I know from inside sources inside my own home that CCO is putting a lot of value on that stuff. So
yeah. Well, have I known your wife longer than you?
Yes. Or did you know her before? She interned for you. My wife interned for you in Rochester at, what was it, Channel 8?
At Channel 8 in 2009.
Yes.
Is when we first met. And so you met her after that, after her internship.
No, I knew her during her internship, but you and I don't think ever met while she was interning.
No. Yeah.
So I don't think that we met until Minnesota, until we both ended up here. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, and we had known each other on social media, but then once you got to Minnesota is when we got to, like, physically know each other. Yeah.
Now we can't again, so we'll hope for that soon to change.
But this was great.
Yeah, anyway. And I appreciate all your support for both me and my wife at WCCO. It is amazing. You are a great friend, sir, and I'm glad we could do this because I know you listen and I know you've got takes, so it was good to get together and hear some. And we'll do it again. I promise it won't be this long until we do it again.
Well, if we look at arbitrary stats, this will be the highest downloaded podcast we've ever been a part of, just you and me.
That's true. That's great. For at least March 17th, it's got a shot to be number one for Purple Insider. So really
appreciate the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah, exactly. Really appreciate it, Corey. Yeah. We'll do it again soon, man.
Thanks, man.